We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. This is our Friday edition of the program. It's been a very busy week, kicking off the show on Monday with some election prep. Rick and I hosted the show talking all things election and the implications. On Tuesday, of course, Rick was with you on Tuesday as he usually is, but that election night coverage, we went 6.5 hours into the evening and ended the night, technically the morning, about 12:30 a.m. Central, with a President Trump victory with the Electoral College. So this is, you know, you read the history books. Hopefully you do. Maybe half of our country doesn't read the history books. But you read the history books growing up and in school, and sometimes you think about, you know, what would it have been like to live through history, through key events in history. And what we're doing right now, anybody alive right now, folks, you're living through major events in American history. So don't forget that and make sure that you take it all in. So President Trump is the president-elect. As of the recent results in the last 24 hours, he has also secured Nevada and Arizona. So he ended the election with 312 electoral college votes. He needed 270 to win. So a pretty strong victory, considering the makeup of our country and how divided we are. Pretty decisive victory for President Trump on the Electoral College and the popular vote. This was unusual. I did not expect President Trump to carry the popular vote. I did expect him to carry the Electoral College and win the presidency, but I did not expect him to carry the popular vote. I thought that was a wish list item that probably wouldn't come to pass, but it did. He received 4 to 5 million more votes than Vice President Harris, which is the first time that's happened in over 20 years for a Republican to win the popular vote. I played the clip earlier in the week on Wednesday of CNN, and Jake Tapper was shocked when the CNN analyst pulled up the map of the U.S. and all the counties, and they were filtering by looking for any state and any county in the U.S. where Vice President Harris outperformed Biden compared to 2020, and there were zero. There were none. Nada. And he was shocked. He said, holy cow, there's none. Kamala Harris has not outperformed Biden in any state. So that was very telling after the election. And this might go down as the fatal mistake. The fatal mistake ultimately being Biden choosing to run again. But then after he chose to run again, the fact that the Democrats ditched Biden, the way that they went about that and the time frame in which they did that, could go down in the history books as the fatal mistake with the Democrats. So the history books will write all this, and we'll see what they say and how it's framed and positioned. But a lot of criticism with the Democrat Party, even internal criticism, and we'll talk about some of that today. Well, it's just, let's just jump through some of these clips. The first one I want to start out with is one I meant to get to on Wednesday, but I just ran out of time. And as I've said multiple times, I'll say it again. I firmly believe that the Democrats, the Marxists, and the left, that they are so radical, so out of control, so out of touch with reality that they're having a very difficult time reining themselves in, bringing themselves back to earth, and rationalizing and reasoning through their positions and their defeat. And so they're just out there. They're cannibalizing themselves because there's inter-party fighting, and there's no clear leader. Look, when President Obama, I didn't like President Obama's politics. I didn't like his policies. But President Obama and his team, they were crafty. They were smart. They were pragmatic. They knew how to win elections. They knew how to run a ground game. But this Democrat Party of 2024, I mean, they are just all out of sorts. And there's no clear leader, right? There's no clear leader. There's no Obama-like figure in the Democrat Party today. This is Joy Reid on The View, where instead of realizing how bad the Democrats are doing with voters and what they need to do to appeal to voters, instead they just go on a rant of demonizing the entire state of Florida. Clip one.
Yeah, and this is the reason that Republicans wanted that 60-vote threshold, because, and as they tried to do in Ohio, you know, Governor DeSantis has bet his political future on being the champion of denying women their rights over their own bodies. He's competing, obviously, with the governor of Texas. He's thinking about a future in which he would like to inherit Donald Trump's white evangelical base. And he's decided that this is his marker. And he's been willing to use really the awesome powers of the state to try to intimidate and bully even television stations in the state against running ads in favor of that protection. So it will defy all of the other states, including very, very red states that have protected women. Florida, in a lot of ways, it's going to be interesting. And when Stephanie is back, it will be interesting to talk about what Florida's future looks like as a place that can attract corporate headquarters and investment in a state where the governor routinely bullies companies, routinely sues companies that displease him, sued Disney, sued cruise lines, bullied schools about mask mandates, bullies TV stations about what ads they can run. It's a pure Project 2025 in miniature in Florida. And that kind of extreme, sort of extremist right wing fascist type government in Florida, does that make it a more attractive place, or does it make it more like some of the other southern states that don't get a lot of investment and an interest from?
I mean, it also particularly means
well, I don't know what she's talking about businesses not doing business in conservative states and businesses not wanting to invest in conservative states. That's just a fundamental falsehood. Since COVID and since the Democrats completely lost their mind with all the COVID restrictions and their high taxation, red states have been growing tremendously. I mean, look at Florida, Texas, Tennessee, even Mississippi. Businesses are flocking to red states because it's a friendly business environment and we have a bit of common sense. So that's an absolute falsehood, claiming that businesses don't want to do business in conservative states. Also, do you think that's going to win you elections in the future, calling everybody in Florida, quote, right-wing fascist? She said it's a right-wing fascist state, the entire state of Florida. Remember when Ted Cruz back in 2016 called New York, he accused candidate Trump at the time of having New York values. That was kind of a jab at President Trump being from New York, which is a notorious liberal state. Well, Ted Cruz got blasted for that. How dare you criticize the entire state of New York? There's a lot of good people there, blah, 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 which is true. And so he really went underwater when he went after the entire state of New York. Well, Joy Reid goes after the entire state of Florida. And where are the critics? Where are the critics? And their terminology and their criticisms are very radical, and they're very divisive, and they're demonizing. And so it's going to be interesting to see at what point. I mean, the Democrat Party is going to have to moderate itself. I mean, it's just going to have to if they want to win any elections in the future. So it's going to be very interesting to track to see who's going to step in the Democrat Party and say, look, guys, we got to have to cool it down. We're going to have to do a reset, because clearly what we're doing right now is absolutely not working. Well, continuing the theme of just pointing out the reality that the left has not learned their lesson yet when it comes to their radical position, this is a pretty humoring clip, and I didn't check with Jeff. I hope he bleeped out the okay, he did. So we got a clean clip here. This is a Rosie O'Donnell talking about how we still need to ditch the Electoral College vote and how we need to prepare for President Trump's mean administration. Clip three.
Call your friends, check on them, and get ready, because we're in for one hell of a ride with him at the helm, and no immunity guardrails. Okay. God bless America, people. That's all I can say. We're going to need it. And how about we get rid of the Electoral College? Does that, anybody like that? Anyone? I'm not so sure anymore. It's a popular vote. That's what we need to do. Who gets the most votes wins. One vote, one person. No racist math in the equation. Okay? That's what I'd like to do.
So that's Rosie O'Donnell saying that, look, hey, you got to get ready for this big, bad, mean Trump. And then we need to still ditch the Electoral College. Well, the reality is that President Trump on this occasion actually won the popular vote. So it doesn't matter if you would have ditched the Electoral College. President Trump won the popular vote. So it doesn't matter. But when you go after the symptoms as opposed to the root problem, the root illness in the party, you're not going to fix things. And this is the fundamental flaw with the Democrat Party, is all they want to focus on, and in some regards, this works in their favor. They are heavily in favor of systematic change. That's what they call it. And they say the system is the problem. We've got to go after systemic change. Well, the system here, folks, is not the problem. The reason the Democrats keep losing is because of their positions. I mean, they are completely out of touch with the American electorate. And so it doesn't matter necessarily whether you change the Electoral College, pack the Supreme Court, get rid of the filibuster in the Senate. That's not the root problem. The root illness is that the Democrat Party is out of touch with the American voters, and every time we put them in charge, we regret it, and we regret it sorely. All right? This is how President Trump got in there to begin with in 2016, and this is why he was just reelected. It's because every time we put the Democrats in charge, they break things, they mess things up, they ruin the country, and they take these radical positions. And so here we are a few days later. That clip was from Wednesday. And the Democrats still aren't recognizing the root problem of being out of touch with the American people. And this is just out today. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, far lefter in the Democrat Party, far lefty, she said that Vice President Kamala Harris's loss was because of, quote, sexism and racism, end quote. So here you have it. I mean, these are leaders in the party. And some of them have owned up to the fact that they just ran a terrible campaign. They're out of touch with voters. And we'll talk about this more in the next segment. I've actually got clips of Democrat strategists saying, hey, we're out of touch with working class America. But AOC here now is saying, look, this is all over sexism and racism. This is all over sexism and racism. And I played the Joe Scarborough clip on Wednesday of them saying that misogyny is the problem with Kamala Harris's loss, that men just don't want women to be in charge. Well, let me just give a notice to the Democrat Party. If you guys want to win any national elections in the future, you cannot demonize the voters that you're trying to win over. You just can't do that and expect to win elections. So the question is when is the Democrat Party going to wake up? If they want to survive, they're going to have to wake up and come to the realization that the American people are unsatisfied with their positions. We'll be back in just a few with more of The Core.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the second segment of today's edition of The Core. We're really doing a recap of the election results and bringing you up to speed with the latest news surrounding it. Just to give you some numbers before we jump back into the content of the show, the Republicans, these various congressional races, some of them are still being tallied. The Republicans, it looks like there's about an 85% chance of them keeping the majority. They need 8 more seats to pick up over the next few days as ballots are still being counted around the country in a few districts. So right now, Republicans have an edge in the House of Representatives. It looks like they should maintain control of the House. When you look over at the Senate, just in the last 24 hours on Thursday afternoon, the Pennsylvania race was called for the Republicans. So David McCormick unseated the Democrat incumbent Bob Casey there by about 0.6 percentage points. About 30,000 votes was the difference. That's a big deal. Bob Casey was the incumbent. I think he's been in Congress for over 20 years in the Senate there, and he was unseated by Dave McCormick. So very big news there for the Republicans. So currently Republicans hold 53 seats in the Senate, which is a very big deal, all right? To have the Senate by 3 votes is a big deal, and here's why. Not only do you have judicial confirmations that go through the Senate, but also cabinet positions have to go through Senate confirmation. So having that 3, 4, 5 seat majority is a really, really big deal. Now, there's 2 outstanding races when it comes to the Senate that haven't been called yet. Now, they could be called very soon because of the margins, but Arizona hasn't been called yet. That's a Democrat seat there currently. And Nevada hasn't been called yet. And Nevada's closer than the one in Arizona. So neither one of those have been called. It looks like they'll probably stay Democrat, which would keep Republicans at 53 seats in the Senate. But nonetheless, there's still 2 races outstanding. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that. And as I mentioned, President Trump did close out the election with 312 Electoral College votes. All of the states' races have been called for the president. So no outstanding states when it comes to the presidential map. But back to our discussion of the Democrats and their problem that they have with voters right now. Some Democrat strategists are realizing, I mean, we've got a clip here, but former Obama, Axelrod, that's what I'm thinking. David Axelrod, the former Obama campaign manager that helped run the 08 campaign, he's even admitted, look, this is not good for the Democrats. Democrats are going to have to figure out how to connect with your average voter out there, and they're just not doing a good job with it. And when you look at the breakdown of the Democrat demographic, I read this data, this result the other day after the election. It's pretty shocking. But Democrats are pretty much winning the college-educated, suburban vote, all right? They're pretty much winning the college-educated, career, suburban vote. But they're losing in every other category. All right, so they're losing a lot of your blue-collar workers. They're losing all of your rural voters. They're even losing a lot of inner-city voters. I mean, President Trump peeled away at the Democrats' lead in some of these key demographics that Democrats have dominated in inner cities for decades. Hispanics. I mean, President Trump actually won Hispanics, which is very hard to do. Hispanics have traditionally voted Democrat, but they voted for President Trump in this past election. So Democrats have lost a lot of ground that they're going to have to make up in order to win a national election in the future. A Democrat strategist was on CNN, and she really broke down What this was Julie Rozinski. She really broke down the problem that Democrats are having with voters and not connecting with them. A very humbling assessment to be on CNN. This is a clip four. Let's listen.
Perhaps this wouldn't be the situation, and we'll never be able to know, right? What do you say to that?
No, I'm going to speak some hard truths to my friends in the Democratic Party. This is not Joe Biden's fault. It's not Kamala Harris's fault. It's not Barack Obama's fault. It is the fault of the Democratic Party in not knowing how to communicate effectively to voters. We are not the party of common sense, which is the message that voters sent to us. For a number of reasons. For a number of reasons, we don't know how to speak to voters. When we address Latina, and language, listen, language has meaning. When we address Latino voters as Latinx, for instance, because that's the politically correct thing to do. It makes them think that we don't even live on the same planet as they do. When we are too afraid to say that, hey, college kids, if you're trashing a campus at Columbia University because you're unhappy about some sort of policy and you're taking over a university, and you're trashing it and preventing other students from learning, that is unacceptable. But we're so worried about alienating one or another cohort in our coalition that we don't know what to say when normal people look at that and say, wait a second, I send my kids to college so they can learn, not so that they can burn buildings and trash lawns, right? And so on and so forth. When we put pronouns after names and say she, her, as opposed to saying, you know what, if I call you by the wrong pronoun, call me out, I'm sorry, I won't do it again, but stop with the virtue signaling and just speak to people like they're normal. There's nothing I'm going to say to Shermichael that I'm not gonna say to you, that I'm not gonna say to somebody else. I speak the same language to everybody. But that's not what Democrats do. We constantly try to parse out different ways of speaking to different cohorts because our focus groups or our polling shows that so-and-so appeals to such-and-such. That's not how normal people think. It's not common sense. And we need to start being the party of common sense again.
That's a Democrat. We need to start being the party of common sense again. This is going to be an internal battle. This is going to be an internal battle. And as I've said before, the primary reason that Vice President Harris had a really hard time, virtually unable to communicate what her positions were on the issues of the day with any sense of clarity is because she didn't genuinely believe some of the things that she was stating. Kamala Harris, folks, and this is no surprise, she's a California liberal, a San Francisco Democrat who has held far left positions on all the major issues for a couple of decades. And she was once rated as the most liberal senator in the U.S. Senate. So, but then she gets this nomination, not through the voters, though, but the Democrat Party apparatus crowns her with this nomination of being the presidential nominee for the Democrats after they booted Biden. And she's trying to play to the middle, play to the moderates. And she seemed very uncomfortable doing so because she's not a true believer. She's not a true believer. And so this was one of the major issues with people were wondering, look, why can't she just answer a question? Why can't she articulate her position on this issue? Well, because she doesn't want to come off as a California Democrat, because that's not going to win her Pennsylvania and North Carolina. But she also doesn't want and really is having a hard time playing towards the middle of the road voters because she doesn't believe it. All right. So she was in this predicament, this internal predicament, this tug of war that she was just not able to sort out in the time frame that was given, about 90 days to be able to turn it around. And not to mention the other issue with the way they did Biden, and this is something that needs to be discussed. And actually, MSNBC commented on this on the election night after President Trump was declared the victor. The way that they treated Biden was terrible for re-election purposes, because look, as bad of a job as President Biden has done, he still has pretty high approval ratings in the Democrat Party. He has over 60% approval in the Democrat Party. Now, it should be higher than that, but that's 60% of voters. The poll that I'm referencing was a poll that questioned voters, who do you want to be your Democrat nominee? And of course, 60% of them said, hey, we still want Biden to be the nominee. But my point in all of this is that when you kick out Biden the way that they did, you're upsetting the 60%. Well, you need those 60% to get over the finish line, obviously. And so by them treating Biden the way they did, not only the time frame, but the way they went about it, it left a bad taste in the mouth of Democrat voters, especially the 60% that said they liked Biden. They were still in the Biden camp, and they were disgruntled, to say the least, and probably some of them didn't show up on Election Day because of how the Democrats handled getting Biden out of power. Well, the ACLU director, deputy director, has a solution for our country. And it's not a solution of unity or let's work together or let's do what's best for our country. But they're already talking about, the Democrats are already talking about, quote, getting in the streets. This is clip two. Let's listen.
One of the reasons why I want to stress to people, we need you in the streets, because the courts will not always do everything for us.
All right. The deputy director of the ACLU says, look, we need you in the streets. I mean, this is the only way we're going to stop Trump. We got to have you in the streets. And this whole aspect of disruption, of protest, of chaos, it's going to be quite interesting to see how this develops, because, you know, I've said, at least privately, that I think the Democrats are going to be just as nasty, just as protesty, if that's a word, just as disgruntled, and just as chaotic as they were in the first term. I mean, remember, on Inauguration Day, they're having the massive women's march in D.C., you know, railing with their grievances against President-elect Trump, who was going to be sworn in that day. And they spent 4 years harassing President Trump. Now, they're not going to have the House of Representatives, likely. They're definitely not going to have the Senate. So they're not going to have a chamber of Congress. And speaking of the Republicans and full steam ahead and this opportunity that we have, there is a Senate leadership race that is going on right now. The election's actually going to take place early next week on the 11th, I believe, or the 12th. But the Mitch McConnell is stepping down, and there's three individuals running for the Senate Majority Leader position. John Thune from, I believe, South Dakota, John Cornyn out of Texas, and Rick Scott out of Florida. Those three senators are running for the Senate Majority Leader, and we'll talk about this more after the break, but who this Senate Majority Leader is very, very important. Who the Senate Majority Leader is very, very important. And aside from Mitch McConnell's work on the judiciary and helping President Trump push through various federal judges, McConnell has been terrible on virtually all other issues. I mean, McConnell has supported all of the foreign wars, Ukraine, etc. Mitch McConnell has multiple times thrown President Trump under the bus, criticized him, called him names, both publicly and behind closed doors. But one of the greatest offenses of Senator McConnell and his allies, which include Cornyn and Thune, is the fact that Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republican Committee spent $0 helping Ted Cruz in Texas. And this is something that a lot of people don't know about, but the Senate Republicans funded $0 to Senator Ted Cruz's election in Texas, and the Democrats funded $100 million into the state of Texas to help Colin Allred try to beat Ted Cruz. Now, he didn't even come close. Cruz won by 9 points. But nonetheless, the fact that the Senate Republicans didn't help Ted Cruz out at all is infuriating and disqualifying. So anybody who cozies up to McConnell, including John Cornyn and Thune, they're disqualified from holding that Senate Republican majority position, the majority leader. We need somebody else. And Senator Rick Scott, I really, really like out of the state of Florida. I think he's qualified to be the Senate majority leader. Anybody other than a McConnell 2.0, because look, this is a historic, generational window of opportunity to get good, positive change done in this country. And the last thing we need is a milquetoast Republican Senate Majority Leader, a Mitch McConnell 2.0. That is the last thing our nation needs. And President Trump is going to have to get involved in this election. There's no sitting on the sidelines. Look, President Trump, with his historic victory, 312 Electoral College votes, all the momentum moving in President Trump's favor, he has a ton of capital. He has a ton of political weight that he can throw around. He can virtually handpick who the next Senate Republican majority leader is. So President Trump's going to have to get involved here. Look, Senator Vance, who now is the vice president-elect, he's been in the Senate. He knows how this works. He knows the nasty backroom, backstabbing Mitch McConnell, how he works. Senator Vance is going to have to give President-elect Trump good wisdom on who he's going to endorse here and who he's going to weigh in on, because this is a big, big deal. So we're going to be working on an action alert. We're going to be working on an email to our supporters, activating them on this issue. We only have a few days left, but we need to weigh in on this. We do not need a Mitch McConnell 2.0 in the Senate GOP majority leader position. We're going to have somebody like Senator Rick Scott in that position to push forth the America First agenda. So we'll play a clip on that after the break. We also have Chris Woodward coming in from American Family News. Hey, before we wrap up this segment, we still have a segment left, so stick around. But we need to, I want to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, type in At the Core and click the subscribe button. We'll be back in just a few.
Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Walker Wildman here on this edition of The Core, on this Friday edition of the program. As I mentioned, going out of the segment, last segment, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Just type in At the Core and click the subscribe button in your podcast library. Well, this Senate Republican Conference election is set to take place on Wednesday of next week. Folks, the interesting thing about this, this kind of gives you a glimpse into how Mitch McConnell works. And we, AFA, we had our spat with Mitch McConnell during the first Trump administration. He was terrible. Wouldn't consider getting rid of the filibuster to get good legislation through. Just very much establishment rhino, has very low approval rating in his home state of Kentucky. But listen to this. Instead of setting the election for January, when you have a new Senate, right? Instead of setting the election for Senate Majority Leader to January, when you have new senators there and they can vote on who they want their leader to be, including Republican senators, Mitch McConnell set this election for next week, for November 13th. And so think about, you're disenfranchising. This is choosing the Senate Majority Leader for the next session, which hasn't even begun yet. And so you're disenfranchising the, let's see, one, two, at least three Republican senators that are going to be sworn in January. Actually, four. You're disenfranchising, considering taking in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Montana, you're disenfranchising four Republican senators from even having a say on who their Senate Majority Leader is. So this entire process is messed up. It's corrupt. It's wrong. And Mitch McConnell is trying to put one of his number twos in, which is Thune and Cornyn. And this is a bad, bad idea. And President Trump needs to get involved ASAP on this to intervene and block these rhinos from taking over the Senate Majority Leader position. Nonetheless, before we jump to Chris, I do want to play one clip. This is John Thune in all of his arrogance letting President Trump know that he just needs to stay out of this whole Senate GOP race. Let's listen.
Is President-elect Trump involved in does he have a chosen preference in the Senate? Do you know, Senator? And will that come into play?
I don't know that he does. I'm staying in regular contact with him and with his team. And, you know, obviously, if he wants to, he could exert a considerable amount of influence on that. But honestly, I think my preference would be, and I think it's probably in his best interest to stay out of that. These Senate secret ballot elections are probably best left to senators, and he's got to work with all of us when it's all said and done. But yep. Whatever he decides to do, that's going to be his prerogative, as we know. And
how many others are?
We're going to have that election next Wednesday, and we'll have a new leader.
All right, so John Thune. Folks, the last thing, I don't know whether he regrets that statement or not, but the last thing that a Republican senator needs to say to the president-elect is that he needs to stay out of anything. That he needs to stay out of anything. I mean, President Trump has the most influence in the Republican Party out of anybody in a long, long time. The last thing you should be saying is that he needs to stay out of it. That actually might provoke President Trump to get in to the involvement of this Senate GOP leadership position. Chris Woodward is with us now. He joins us each Friday. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I'm looking for an anti-Thune tweet or post from President Trump as we speak.
Yes.
It's coming.
You're going to find it.
I don't know what nickname. Dune Thune. I don't know what we're going to call him.
In the past, President Trump has actually gone after both Cornyn and Thune as being Mitch McConnell's henchmen. So there's definitely bad blood there. And I think we need fresh leadership. I think we need Rick Scott.
It is bad on McConnell's part that you would do this. He's part of the reason why we still have the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare.
Yep.
He and other members of Congress, quite frankly, Republicans in the House and Senate, they haggled over the replacement rather than just get rid of Obamacare and then come up with a replacement.
Yes.
He's part of the reason why we still have that. Years after he said, put me in office and we'll get rid of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we'll continue to track that. Rick Scott is the guy. And look, this is not an election for public office. This is an election for a position within Congress. So to answer the question about people saying, how can you endorse Rick Scott? Because this is not an election for public office. So I support Rick Scott. AFA supports Rick Scott. And he's the guy for the Senate GOP leadership position. Chris, the Fed met today.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they met earlier in the week.
Yes.
But nonetheless, they met this week and voted on a rate cut. Is that correct?
Yes, they have voted on a rate cut. It's not a drastic one. It's going to go down just a smidge. And right now, kind of the knee-jerk reaction from various people is that this is not good. They need to wait. I talked with one economist at the Heritage Foundation who actually warned that this may increase inflation because banks are going to look at this and go, oh, okay, we can start lending again, and that's going to put more money back out there, thus increasing the amount of inflation, which is the absolute last thing we need right now, on top of all the other issues that this president-elect and his administration are going to have to deal with.
Yeah, I agree with the Heritage spokesperson on that from purely a rate vantage point. But I will say, because when you do lower rates, it frees up the money supply and could be inflationary. But I think if President Trump gets in there, which we know he will, and goes after other areas that are inflationary, like energy, it could be okay. It could even out because at the end of the day, the interest rate really isn't the core problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
The interest rate is a tool that they use to rein in inflation, but the underlying problem is that the money supply was too much, right, with the trillions of dollars that Congress printed, but also the overregulation, right? The overregulation on the energy industry and energy prices being skyrocketing. So there's all that COVID lag where we made a lot of bad decisions as a country that we're still getting over. So it's possible that if President Trump gets in there and really begins to free up the economy, that lowering of interest rates isn't a bad idea.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And people do need to understand that, you know, Trump's going to take office. If the Lord tarries, Trump's going to take office January 20th of next year. That doesn't mean the cost of your groceries on January 21st is going to be half of what you're paying right now. It's going to take a long time. But if you do all the things that you just mentioned there, where you announce things on day one through executive order, let's get rid of these regulations, let's drill, baby, drill, all these things that he's talked about for over a year now, all of those things combined will have an immediate impact. Your 401k is probably going to be doing pretty well, depending on where you have your money. And really by the end, I think, of 2025, certainly by spring of 2026 is when you're going to start to see real relief that you voted for, if the people listening to me voted for Trump, hoping that he would make the economy better.
Yeah. The mortgage rates, I know that's not directly controlled by the Fed, mm-hmm. right? They're controlling like the prime lending rate. But the bond market, I guess, is one of the main indicators of where the mortgage rates are going to go. But traditionally, mortgage rates do trend with lending rates that the Fed puts out to some regard, and there's some lag effect there. But I think, Chris, we're going to have mortgage rates continue to drop. I mean, I don't think we need to be at 1 or 2% mortgage rates, mm-hmm. but I think somewhere between 3 and 4 is probably a healthy ballpark.
Yeah, it would be. I know somebody that's buying a house. He just actually went through signing the paperwork, and his plan is to, at some point in the next couple of years, refinance.
Yeah.
That would help him. And certainly, I'm looking at his case as one of many out there in America. And again, that's something people are really going to have to look for and, again, be patient on. I would imagine a lot of people on television that are in the tank for the Democrats are going to start saying by spring break next year, Easter weekend, things like that, oh, you know, Trump said he was going to make things cheaper and it's still not good. Remember that in November of 2026 because we're back in the midterms, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, a lot needs to be done. That is one certain area. You touched on energy. I know that's kind of boring. Not some people are into that as much as we might be, but people need to understand that a sound and effective energy policy for a consistent period of time has an impact on a whole bunch of things. Hmm. Diesel fuel, whatever you buy in a store got there thanks to diesel fuel. So if we can do things to improve that area and we can make natural gas more abundant, all these kinds of things that were problems in the last 4 years, those kinds of things all will help stuff and people probably by the early part of 2026, if not sooner.
Did you see this? I'm still double checking. I'm fact checking myself. But did you see the Zillow CEO reportedly said that that mass deportations could help the housing market?
I'm looking.
Yeah, I saw this on X. Now, there can be fake news on X.
Yeah.
But if he said that, which we'll confirm that, but that would be quite interesting if he admitted that that deportation would help the housing market. And the reason I say that is because J.D. Vance pointed this out on a podcast, and whether he said it or not, my point I'm about to make still stands. J.D. Vance said in a podcast with the New York Times that if we deport illegal immigrants, at some point, that's going to help the housing market
mm-hmm.
because they have to have somewhere to live when they're here, and that would free up, whether we're talking apartments or homes or
right.
condos or whatever. Theoretically, when you're talking tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants that are being deported, theoretically, that's got to free up housing.
It should. And, you know, it's not just houses that governments have been putting migrants or illegal immigrants in. Schools and other government-funded buildings have been used to house people in places like Chicago, big cities where Trump had a lot more support this time around than he did in 2020, certainly in 2016. That's one of the issues that drove people to the poll was, look, I'm here legally. I pay taxes for these kinds of things. My kids are doing remote learning because we got people sleeping in the classroom.
Yeah.
So it's a big problem, and that's one of the things too people are going to have to be ready for, because I guarantee you, at some point early next year, in an effort to sell magazines or newspapers, they're going to have pictures of people being detained or arrested, and they're going to blame Trump for it.
Yeah. So it looks like it's disputed on whether Zillow's CEO said that. He definitely said that freeing up inventory will help the housing market, but there's still debate on whether he was linking that to deportation.
Maybe it's missing an apostrophe, like the garbage comment.
Exactly. But the point that J.D. Vance made still stands. I mean, on paper, if you deport 100,000 illegal immigrants, well, wherever they were living now becomes available to Americans.
And look, I know this sounds heartless. We're talking about people being kicked out of their home or sent back to a place they say they were trying to escape for a better life. I get all that, but we are a nation of laws.
Yeah.
And we have to live by them. It's not that you can't be here. You can't be here this way. And that's one of the things that Republicans, I think, communicated better in this election than they ever have. It's not that you can't be here. It's that we have a system and you have to go by the system, because if you don't go by the system or any rules at any time, it's chaos.
Yeah.
And that's what we've had.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What are some other stories that AFN's tracking?
Yes, this one's an interesting one, and it's in the videos section of AFN.net. So go to AFN.net, scroll down about midway through the homepage, you'll see videos that we post from the Associated Press. And they had a story out. There's sound bites from all kinds of people in this particular area being interviewed as to why they voted for Trump. Here's the story. The most Hispanic county in the U.S. votes Republican for the first time in decades. It says Republicans flipped predominantly Hispanic counties along the U.S.-Mexico border. In Starr County, the most Hispanic county in the nation, voters hadn't backed a Republican presidential candidate for decades. What were the issues that they voted on? Border security and the economy.
Wow. Hispanic, these counties that first time. Yeah, well, that's decades. But, Chris, did you see where some of these Hispanic counties voted for Republicans for the first time since like 1890?
Yes, yes. This is I'm in that category. Yeah,
that's crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that he was able to pull that off, it shows that his message of common sense policies where everybody's lifted up rang true. And one more comment or one more thought, Chris, that I want to get you on. We got about 30 seconds left.
Okay.
Is do you think the Democrats are going to be able to rein themselves in and do a reset?
Not in time for the midterms, maybe in time for 2028. They're really going to have to do some soul searching and figure out who's going to be able to go toe-to-toe with J.D. Vance.
Which
and not sound woke.
They're going to need a strong leader, like an Obama.
Yes.
To step in, rein it in, and do a reset.
Yeah, she'd be 65 by that point.
Yeah.
68 if Michelle was the one to be brought out there.
Right. Or I'm even saying like, either Michelle Obama, which she's very popular amongst Democrats, or a Barack Obama-like figure,
right?
A new Obama in the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
That's their only chance at a reset. Because as long as you have Harris and AOC in charge, it spells bad news. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us on this edition of The Core, listening to American Family Radio. Check out our website, AFR.net. Download the AFR app, and we'll see you next week.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.